I'll be reading from Acts 20. On the first day of the week, we came together to break bread. Paul spoke to the people, and because he intended to leave the next day, he kept on talking until midnight. There were many lamps in the upstairs room where we were meeting. Seated in a window was a young man named Eutychus, who was sinking into a deep sleep as Paul talked on and on. When he was sound asleep, he fell to the ground from the third story and was picked up dead. Paul went down, threw himself on the young man, and put his arms around him. "Do not be alarmed," he said. "He's alive." Then he went upstairs again and broke bread and ate. After talking until daylight, he left. The people took the young man home alive and were greatly comforted.
Don't y'all get nervous. I'm not preaching. This morning I do have a couple of verses of scripture I'd like to read. If you could pull those up for me, Mike. Firstly, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 12 and 13. "Now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to acknowledge those who work hard among you, who care for you in the Lord and who abolish you. Hold them in your highest regard and love because of their work. Live in peace with each other." Now the overseer, this is 1 Timothy verse 2, chapter 2, verse 2 and 4. "Now the overseer is to be above reproach, faithful to his wife, temperate, self-controlled, respectable, hospitable, able to teach, not given to drunkenness, not violent but gentle, not quarrelsome, but nor a lover of money. He must manage his own family well and see that his children obey him, and he must do so in a manner worthy of full respect." It's been my great honor for 25 years to be in this congregation with Tell Beatty as our preacher. He's been here much longer than that. If you count the times that he's gone over on his service, it would have probably been more like 35 years. And it has been much longer than that. Kev's been with us the biggest part of his adult life, serving this community and serving this congregation, and mainly serving God. Today we honor a godly man. And as we, if you'll permit me to get my eyes on, what does it take to be a godly man, so to speak? And I gave a little thought to this. A godly man honors God with his time. Tev's been preaching here for longer than anybody that's ever been in this congregation. And he's always been there for anyone that's needed him. And he's rejoiced with us as we've had family members born. He's visited us with us in the hospital when we were sick, comforted us when we needed it, put his arm around us, and just gave us words of encouragement when he needed. He's been there with the loss of our family members, comforted us in every way. And never once has he acted like it was a chore or a job. A godly man honors God with his time, and Tev has always done that to the fullest extent. He also honored God with his talents. Tev can preach through crying babies, through members who slam doors 20 times and walk outside and never miss a beat. He could hold his own with Doug Perry when he would, those of you that knew him, when he would harass him a little bit, he would always hold his own there. He's a firm believer that Rook is not a game, but even in those times, God has blessed Tev with being a charitable individual that we are so glad to have as our leader. Tev's a full-time trustee in Rutherford County. He's a full-time farmer. He's a full-time dad. He's a full-time husband and a full-time son that I know his mother is very proud of. But most of all, he's a full-time friend, and he's a full-time man of God in everything that he does. Tev, you've been a preacher here at Milton longer than anybody before you. And we just wanted you to know this morning how much we love you, how much we thank you, and how privileged we are to have you as our leader, as an example to each and every one of us. We thank you so much for bringing us closer to God each day by your example. You never ask for much in return, but you always give. You're the true example of a godly man. It's my privilege this morning, if you'd come up, Ted, we've got a little something we'd like to give you. Ted, we'd like to present you with this for 25 years of faithful service as minister of this church.
Well, thank you.
Just let you know how much we love you.
Thank you, brother.
Appreciate the end on.
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you. Thank you. You just wanted a short sermon, didn't you, Ralph? Thank you. I'm honored. And I didn't know that was coming. Because I got a birthday. Mom was here, but it's my birthday tomorrow. So I've been here. The first Sunday in March was 25 years I've been in the pulpit full time. But almost 30 years that I've been here. And I've preached probably 27 of those 30 years. And it's my blessing, it's my privilege to be here. And I will be 54, so I have spent the vast majority of my adult life here, Ralph. It's my privilege to be here. I don't feel like I'm the preacher at Milton. I feel like I'm the member that preaches. And there's a difference. This is just home, and I get the opportunity to do this. And so, thank you, and thank you for that. For remembering, I remember I was in Centerville in the 80s, and Paul Rogers had been at Centerville for 28 years. And I thought, man, that is forever. You know, I thought, you know, he'd been there forever, and here it's been 25, and it really doesn't seem like that. It just seems like the other day that I came to Milton. Jerry Smith called me the first time to come and fill in. Right after I'd gotten out of college, Jerry called and said, can you come fill in for us? And I guess the rest is history. And this is a true story. I was filling in when David West moved on. And I started filling in, which would have been 25 years ago. And so I was the fill-in. And I literally missed a business meeting one night and reading in the minutes. The men had voted to know to stop looking. And so that was the discussion we had for me to preach. And so here I am. Thank you for making this so pleasant for me and my family. I'm honored and really don't know what to say. Thank you. All right, we're going to change modes here. We're going to preach. Try. News. Next Sunday, daylight saving time begins. So you're going to lose an hour of sleep. I knew Nate is in pain over here. That hour in the fall, you pay for it. There's no free lunches, Big. So remember that next week to move those clocks back 1 hour. And so we will start, moving forward. Yeah, forward an hour. Yeah, forward. Forward an hour. Whatever we do, do it. Back in the spring, forward, right? Spring forward.
It just happens automatically on your cell phone. I
don't even know, right? Just set your alarm and you won't know. You'll just go, I just don't feel quite as rested this morning. But do remember that. And I do like those long afternoons. And in the period of the day, I appreciate Ralph mentioning it's just a gorgeous day. I'll just be honest with you. I walked out the door this morning, and I would have started this morning, but I don't lead singing. I just walked out the door, and I just burst into God be the glory. Great things he has done. It was just that kind of morning. It was just one of those mornings that moves you. To God be the glory, great things he has done. And great things God has done, hadn't he? Great things among us and great things with us. And we certainly want to honor him. I want to talk about the story of Eutychus. Most of us know about Eutychus. We may not know him by name, but we remember the guy that falls out of the window, right? How long did Paul preach? What's the answer to that question? till daybreak. We often say till midnight. But Paul was not discouraged by doors slamming, Ralph, or by crying babies, or by people dying in the middle of his sermon. Because Eutychus falls out the window and dies, and Paul does raise him, and that's around midnight. And the Bible does say that he continued to talk until daybreak. But I want to back up. What day is it that this occurs? It tells us the day. I'll make you think about it for a minute. It's the first day of the week. It's the first day of the week when they had gathered to break bread. I want us to talk about that for a moment, because the question often comes up, when did the Sabbath change? You ever thought that, or you ever been asked that question? Well, let me answer it this way. Never. The Sabbath never changed. The Sabbath is the seventh day. In our calendar, it's Saturday. That's the Sabbath. It's always been the Sabbath day. Why did we honor the Sabbath day and keep it holy? Because God said so, and they're not multiple choice, Sonny, right? If you haven't read Sonny's sign. Sonny does that sign every week for us. It was pretty this morning. It's not always pretty when he's out there, but he's out there every week doing that for us, and I appreciate it. But what was the significance of the Sabbath? God rested. That's right. For those of you who might be visiting, and you're certainly welcome to be here, when I'm not in the pulpit, you can talk back. And I'm rarely in the pulpit. But I want us to think about these things, because it's important we understand the significance. What's the significance of Sabbath? The significance is that in 6 days, God created the earth and man. And on the seventh day, God rested. And so he said, the Sabbath day is special. It's a day of rest. It's a day of holiness. But this isn't Saturday. It's Sunday. It's the first day of the week. So why do we meet on the first day of the week? Well, the Sabbath should still have significance to us. It can. Although the New Testament will say, and I must remember that some people have one day more important than the other. But the reason that we would worship on Sunday is, it's a church history. It's certainly part of our restoration background, who said, let's go back and do things biblical ways, right? Let's follow the best we can the biblical pattern. And the biblical pattern is the Christians were meeting on the first day of the week. We see throughout the book of Acts, Paul will wait to spend the first day of the week with the Christians. On the first day of the week, they were gathered. There's significance about their gathering on the first day of the week. Why the first day of the week? Why did they move from where the Jews really made the significance of Sabbath? And they would meet in the synagogues on days other than the Sabbath. But the significance of the Sabbath, why have we moved to the first day of the week? Is it more convenient? Why were the Christians meeting on the first day of the week? Why are you and I here on the first day of the week? It's the Lord's Day. We call it the Lord's Day. What's the significance of it? Resurrection. Jesus was raised on the first day of the week. Jesus was raised on the first day of the week. And so we gather not only in our assemblies to worship, but it is a time that we recognize the resurrection, which we've talked about through this whole book of Acts. Paul has said, and Paul will continue to say through this book, that the resurrection is what it's all about. That's the culmination of everything, right? Now, when I say that, we know it's the teaching, all that. But Paul says resurrection is the hinge on which everything else swings. Resurrection is the fact that if it does not exist, nothing else matters. Resurrection is the fact that one must believe to truly have faith and to truly understand what God is doing. Because what happens in the garden? Adam and Eve sin, right? We're familiar with that. That happens in the garden. Adam and Eve sin. They're cast out of the garden. They can no longer eat from the tree of life. And what's going to happen to them? They're going to die because they can't eat from the tree of life. As we've talked about many times, Adam and Eve were designed to live forever. They could have eaten from the tree of life and lived forever. But they disobeyed God. They're cast out of the garden. And so death comes into the world. That's why if I ask many people, how are you doing today? I'm on the right side of the grass. Because that response is based on the fact that death is really in our psyche, in our lives, in our spirits. Death is that ultimate defeat, right? We know there are pains, and you know it's kind of a pet peeve, but I never tell you I'm on the right side of the grass because I think there's a lot of bad things that can happen to you on this side of the grass. But I'm going to tell you something. If you don't believe in resurrection and you don't believe in Jesus, when death comes, all opportunity is gone, right? All hope, all life. So even if you're in terrible pain, you might say, but tomorrow they might come up with some medical procedure or medicine that makes things better. But when I'm dead, it's over. Because we understand death without resurrection, it's just over. Thereby, the philosophy, and man, this is really getting dated. 25 years ago, it was a little dated. It's really dated today. Go for all the gusto you can get. I don't remember which adult beverage that was an ad for. Eddie, do you remember? Because you're a little older than I am, Eddie. Go for, I don't know, it was Miller, it was one of them. But go for all the gusto you can get. Because if there is nothing else, that's all life is about, isn't it? That's all life is about. But because there is resurrection, the resurrection of Jesus who overcame death, and not just death, who overcame the power of Satan. What Satan held over us, Jesus has overcome that. And Paul says, here's the fact. Jesus is just the first fruits of all of us who will be raised from the dead. And so Jesus' resurrection says death is no longer final. Death is no longer final. But death has been overcome. Now, we're going to see people raised from the dead. We're going to see it in this passage. But we know Eutychus dies again. Right? Eutychus is going to die again. We don't have it recorded, but we just know that happened. But Jesus rose from the dead to what? And is ascended back to the Father. Not to die again. He had overcome death. And the promise is, I've gone to prepare a place for you. I'm going to come back. I'm going to take you. And the former things, John will tell us, will have passed away. There'll be no death. It's gone. Death will be gone. We'll again eat from the tree of life. And death will be gone. So as Christians, we gather to celebrate resurrection. We gather to celebrate resurrection. It's sometimes called the Christian Sabbath, but it's really probably not good for us to confuse the two. Really not good to confuse the two. They are separate. Sunday is a time where Christians celebrate resurrection and its significance to us. And that's what they're doing early on, celebrating resurrection. That's when they're meeting together. Not only to take the Lord's Supper and breaking bread, but I think it was more of a meal than what we do today. It was more of a meal. And we'll see that, especially in Paul's writing to the Corinthians, when you see the difficulty they were having in Corinth about some eating too much and some not having enough. But it was a time of remembrance and a time of fellowship where they thought about Jesus and about his life, and about his resurrection. And so, we are gathering on the first day of the week. They gathered on the first day of the week. And Paul is preaching to them, and the NIV says Paul was talking. Which is interesting, because I really feel like they're in an upper room. My guess is it's not that large. You know, it's not in a Colosseum or an auditorium. He's just meeting in a meeting room, maybe in somebody's house, but probably a room designed for meeting, but not significantly large. In fact, I don't know the size, but my guess is this section right here might catch everybody that could have gotten packed in that room. Just not a huge number. When you're there around, and it's probably hot or it's crowded, so Eutychus is sitting up in the window. But they're talking because Paul is going to leave, and why are they going all night? Because they're interested and enthused about what Paul is saying, and Paul is interested and enthused about sharing it with them. They're not there out of obligation. They're not there because they have to be. You know, they didn't sneak out just as quick as they could get away. And sometimes we have to go. I'm not fussed about that. But they were there because they were excited. For many of us that now aren't quite as young as we used to be, thank you, Josh and Dan, for reminding me. Say what, brother? Yes. I understand. I've been put up with 25 years of that. But can you remember, especially when you're younger, it still happens for us today, but when you're really excited about something, maybe a new relationship, maybe a new toy, whatever that looked like, and you stayed up all night talking to somebody or putting it together or using it because you were just, it's something you wanted to figure it out, you wanted to do it, you were excited about it. I remember in college, we'd stay up sometimes all night in the dorm. One night, Ralph, we played Rook all night long. Just decided we were going to play Rook all night and then get up and go to class. We did it on a Thursday night, so Friday afternoon we could crash. But sometimes we'd sit up all night or late into the night talking about things, discussing things. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. If you need me, I'll try to be there in the middle of the night. But for the most part, if we're going to discuss much, we better get done before 8:30. But you remember being young and doing that because why? Because you were excited about it. And I want to see in this passage, Paul was moving through. He's more rapidly on this missionary journey, visiting back places. And they were excited because I'm going to tell you what Luke tells us he was doing. He was encouraging those people. Paul was coming to encourage them. He wasn't just instructing, which he was. It wasn't just about, you did this wrong, you did this wrong. He's encouraging them in their faith, encouraging them in their lives, encouraging them in their hope. He's encouraged them. And so they're excited to step because Paul has an insight that's different than they had, and they understood that. Paul had learned his message directly from Jesus himself. Wouldn't that excite you? If a man who had visited with Jesus himself were able to come and speak to us today, I'd be excited. And so they were. So that's why he's preaching. That's why they don't mind. Because they're learning something new and an insight that's different, and they know Paul is going to move on. And so they're enjoying that. Then Eutychus falls out and is dead. And that would be memorable, wouldn't it? That would be memorable. There would have been people upset and crying, because there's probably family there, folks who knew him, loved ones. And you know, when tragedy hits something that we're excited and having a good time, and then tragedy strikes or we get that phone call, we go from here to there really quickly. Has that ever happened to you? Sometimes you're having a great time and that quickly something happens. You remember those moments? You can almost remember what happened and when it happened, can't you? It changed that quickly that Eutychus fell out the window and died. So they were so excited about hearing Paul. But what does Paul do? He goes downstairs, and not much different than when Peter raises Tabitha. He says, he's alive. He throws himself and he grabs Eutychus. And he grabs him up, and Eutychus comes back to life. He was dead, but he came back to life. I want to talk about that for just a moment. I want to remind us of an event that we've talked about in studying the Gospels. Have you ever seen that bumper sticker that said, anytime you think you're important, try walking on water? You seen those? I get close enough to read the bumper stickers. Even the ones that says, if you can read this bumper sticker, you're too close. You know, all of that. But I do sometimes read the bumper stickers. And then I'm amazed at the car that the whole back end is bumper stickers. And then I start looking for what bumper sticker's not there. Because all those cars that are covered with bumper stickers, there's always tolerance. Although, you know, and all of that. Not tolerance, but it's, what's the one with all the religious symbols? Coexist. You know, I can almost expect what bumper stickers are going to be there. And I look, there was one the other day that didn't have a bumper sticker. I just said, I can't believe that's not on this car. But anyway, I read those, and there's one, if you ever get think you're important, try walking on water. Because who walked on water? And Peter. That's right, Kathy. Jesus and Peter. Peter walked on the water. Peter walked on the water. Remember that. Peter walked on the water. By the power of what? By the power of God, right? We don't ever want to take that away. But through the special gifts that the Spirit had put on Peter and Paul, they are able to raise people from the dead and heal people who are sick. I want to share that, and I want us to think about that, because too often we feel like God doesn't use us, God doesn't move through us, but He does. Now, while we don't have the same gifts that they had, all right? Same Spirit, different gifts. Same Spirit, different gifts. I can pray for your healing, but I don't have a special power for healing, nor have I met anybody that I knew that had that gift. And it seems that gift was given to the apostles, and they had the ability to pass it on, and that seems to be where the gift ceases. Because we remember, we have Simon the sorcerer. What did he want? He saw that they were able to get that gift, so he asked. Had Simon received the Spirit? Yes. But he had received that gift? No. And he wants to buy it, not because he wants to go about doing good, but because either it brings financial gain or prestige. And Peter says, man, you need to pray about this. But God worked through people. Peter walked on water. Peter and the apostles and Paul are able to raise people from the dead. The reason I share that with us is James will tell us that the fervent prayer of a righteous man is powerful and effective. James says that prayer is effective. That through our prayer, things happen. Things change. That God is not removed from the earth. That God has not just set this plan and set the earth in motion and then set the plan through Jesus in motion and now has removed Himself and He is a spectator. That is not biblical. God's spectatorship is not biblical. He doesn't have the big skybox where He just watches the events and cheers. But God is involved. And through our prayer and through our lives, God works. God works. God worked through Peter. God worked through Paul. God worked through the apostles. God worked through Aquila and Priscilla, right? That we read about. So, are we letting God work through our lives? Are we making ourselves available for God to use us? Are we surrendering our will and say, God, use me? Are we praying, God, use me? And are we praying for other people, not that it's pie in the sky and the sweet by and by, but praying with the confident expectation of God's answer? Why do you not have? Because you don't ask. Why do you not have? Because you do not ask. And, this is the same passage, it's not me, it's the Scripture. And then sometimes when you ask, you don't receive. Why? Because you ask with wrong motives. It's about selfishness, right? But when we ask in humility and faith, we should expect God to answer. Now, does God always answer yes? No. And does God always answer immediately? No. Which is what we want. I don't know how long the Egyptians had been asking God for deliverance. I don't know. I don't know how long. But I know this. He spent 80 years preparing the deliverer. Right? Moses, born in Egypt, is 80 when God calls him to go back to Egypt. And I know this. God had already told his people that it was going to be hundreds of years. But God had... Now, what sometimes is my thought, maybe yours, God, a lot of those people that prayed for deliverance died in that 80 years and didn't get deliverance. And then dare we? That doesn't seem fair. That's a term we use a lot, don't we? And now, we've moved from is it fair to that doesn't seem what they deserved. Because every ad tells me I need to get what I deserve, right? And there are folks going to help me get what I deserve from Medicare. And I deserve their product. You know that? I deserve that product. And the justice that I deserve or the payout that I deserve. I mean, some days when I think about retirement, I just think about hitting my brakes in front of a semi. It seems like the way to go. I'm only making that lightly because it's all about now what we deserve. And so we struggle with why didn't God answer that prayer sooner and deliver those people? And here's what God will say. And this is tough. This is really tough. God says, I'm God. I'm sovereign. I'm sovereign. Job, where were you when I hung the earth from nothing? Where were you, Job? When I made the stars and the sun and the moon, where were you? When I contained the seas and the sea monsters, where were you? I sent my son to die for you. Because I don't do everything the way you think it ought to be done. Really, who are you to question my judgment? That is really a tough lesson for us. To surrender to the kingship and the lordship of God. To surrender to the lordship of God. That He is Lord. And that He is benevolent. And that He is loving. But He is Lord. Now, it's almost out of our realm of experience. Because every 4 years, and there's a primary election here tomorrow, or Tuesday, here Tuesday, primary election Tuesday, if you didn't know that was going on, and a county primary as well on Tuesday. But we're used to, if we don't like an individual or a group or a party or a thought, what do? We vote them out, or we attempt to, and vote somebody else in. That's our system. That's the way it's designed. Okay. That's a good thing. I'm for that. I'm for that. But when you had a king, if you didn't like something, you learned to live with it, didn't you? And God says, I'm king. Now, He doesn't say that in an ugly way. He's a king who says, I want you to be my sons. Because who do kings tax? It's in the Bible. It's in the Bible. Foreigners. Right? Other people. And do they send their children to war? No, they send somebody else's. So we've been invited to be children of the king, so we're heirs of all that God has, which is everything, right? And of his love. But it's still a surrendering to his lordship. And learning to trust that God is good and that God cares for us and that God will always do what's right. But that God's perspective is different than ours. Was it fair what happened to Job? I mean, we read that story and you got to respect Job, right? I mean, you got to respect Job. But the things that happened to Job, put yourself in Job's place. Can you imagine putting yourself in Job's place? Imagine tomorrow everything you own is gone. Poof. Poof. I don't know what would cause that, but something happened. Everything is gone. And here's the one. You get a phone call. We talked about those phone calls. You get the phone call and every child that you have has been killed. All of your family is gone. If you got one or six, every one of them is gone. Imagine that. Imagine the grief of that. And then you break out in painful sores, where you just sit there and want to take broken pottery and scrape yourself. That's rough, isn't it? Mom had a skin rash all fall. I see her responding. I mean, she didn't want to go anywhere. And it wasn't that bad. Not like Job had, but it just changes your whole life. The reason I said, those are all the things that came in on Job. And you know why? Because Job was doing what God called him to do. Now, from our way of thinking, that ain't fair. But then, what's the outcome? Job is blessed multiple times beyond what he had. But that's really not the point that we're going to have. But that what? If we're faithful to God, God has a plan that he's going to take care of us in ways beyond what we can imagine, right? And here's what has to change in our perspective. And I'm going to quit. Here's what's going to change in our perspective. Our lives are just a vapor that appear for a little while and then they're gone. It doesn't mean we're not important. We're important to God, so important that he sent his son to die for us. But as God looks at what we're dealing with today and sometimes doesn't answer the way we want him to answer it, because God knows, you're going to be with me so soon and I've got things so good, this just don't sweat the small stuff, right? While it's huge for us today, God says, you're going to be here in just a minute. Does that change things for you? You go, 80 years is nothing. Moses, in the only psalm that's attributed to Moses, says, unto the Lord, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. And so, God loves us. And God has a plan for us. And he is a king that is so benevolent that he's adopted us as children. We have to learn that he is king and to follow him. That God uses us, and that we ought to make ourselves available for God to use us. Not necessarily in miraculous ways, but in influencing people, teaching people, lifting burdens, sharing with people the things that we can do, God's called us to do. And that's our role, right? I can't make everything right, but if I'll do my part, God's always going to work it out, isn't he? And I need to do what my part is. Because God works through us. We come together today because there is resurrection from the dead. If this life is all there was, then it would be probably appropriate for us to be mad at God that this life wasn't full of everything we could possibly want. If this is all there was, and there is a God, I'm giving you a hypothetical, and this life is all there was, every bad day we could look at God and say, they're so short, why are you letting me have a bad day? They ought to be good days. But because of resurrection, we know we're only in this fallen world for a short time. And then the never-ending day is all good. And that's what God has prepared for us. It came at a great cost, the cost of His Son. Was that fair? Nothing fair about He who was without sin became sin. He who was perfect suffered death. Wasn't fair, but it was God's gift that you and I might have life abundantly and eternally. If you're ready to acknowledge the kingship of Jesus, come while we stand and sing.